for tuning in to Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio on LiveParanormal.com. Hosted by owners Robert Zarek and Nikki Paranormal. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio. My name is Nikki Paranormal, and I'm just one of the hosts this evening. The other one is Rob. Let's bring him in live. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. How about you?
I've been really good.
Great.
I've been a little bit tired over the past day and a half because we've did a lot of investigating this past weekend, and a lot of cool live streams. Hope people actually caught that. And overall, pretty good. I think anytime you're coming off a successful weekend of investigating and live streaming, it's good.
Oh, definitely. I like to think so.
And I think tonight's going to be fun because we have a paranormal investigator right after we do, you know, did our investigation. So we can kind of talk shop with him and stuff and, you know, see what he's got going on. And, you know, he looks like he has done a lot of cool things. He does a lot of cool things. And
yeah,
I think it's going to be a good show tonight.
Definitely. I agree. Maybe he's got a take on, maybe we get his thoughts on haunted objects.
You know what, a lot of people know that we have a doll that we take with us on a lot of our investigations. And unfortunately, it's probably my fault, and he was left at one of the locations we went to. So I don't know how that works. Like, how would, like, if we have him shipped to us, and if he's claustrophobic, you know, what are we somehow breaking the rules by putting him in a box and having him shipped? Is he going to feel smothered? You know,
not if there are holes poked in it. I think that it might be okay if there's holes poked in the box.
Should we buy him a plane ticket and put him in like a crate, an animal crate, you know, and I just don't know.
Here's,
I don't know how you transport. Yeah, can you, like, I guess you have
clearly
to.
Clearly, it has to be marked fragile.
Transport it.
Yeah.
Alive. We're haunted.
Formerly.
I don't know how that works.
I don't know if you put that on it, that he'll actually arrive.
Haunted.
You know? Caution.
So we do,
have
that kind of debacle that we left him at the archive of the Afterlife Haunted Museum in Cameron, West Virginia, during our investigation.
Like, dark room.
In the dark room. So, like, we couldn't have made it any worse. You know, here we take Chris with us. And, you know, I think we've been, yeah. Or maybe he's now evil. They have his soul.
Maybe he was before. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Or maybe he's right at home.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know the origin of Chris.
He's with his team.
I see, that's the thing. So, you know, it's interesting. We're doing, you know, a haunted objects type of show tonight, talking about, you know, can objects have an attachment, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have always been on the fence with that theory. And lo and behold, it seems like whenever I'm on the fence, it's like, something or someone goes out of
the
way.
You get knocked off
the
fence.
Yeah, prove me on the wrong side or right side, depending on where you're at. But, you know, we have a doll that, you know, we purchased a lot of, and I mean a lot, not like it was a lot, of haunted dolls that were for sale. And this was one of them. And for, I don't know what your thought process was, but for one reason or another, you grabbed the doll and you brought it out. And you're like, hey, let's investigate with one of the dolls. And I was like, all right, you know, let's see what happens. And the funny thing is, you know, we asked the doll its name. We got a response, Chris. Fair enough. You know,
right.
Chris. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on a second investigation. What's your name? Chris. Okay. Third, fourth, fifth investigation, what's your name? Chris, Chris, Chris. It became a little bit obvious that every time we brought that doll with us and we asked, you know, what is your name? And the response was, my name is Chris. I am Chris. Chris this, Chris that. That it kind of opened my eyes that, you know, this could be something. There could be something to the attachment of items. And unfortunately, on the seventh or eighth location we've taken them to, but we, you know, we investigate some of the same locations. We mistakenly left him in the dark room of a haunted museum. And dark by meaning evil attachments.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we may have, mm-hmm. we may have unintentionally really messed Chris up.
Lost every future babysitting gig we might have ever been able to obtain. Maybe.
And then it's like, well, how do you make it up to Chris? You know, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I just,
maybe we leave him in a
no.
church for a week. I don't know. Maybe we don't leave him anymore.
Leave him somewhere happy. You know, and then is he going to be rebellious and be mad at us? You know,
send him to
never
Disney.
Know these things.
He needs to go to Disney. Every kid's happier after that. So, yeah.
We could just.
I think that's the only answer. Mm-hmm.
Unless we're assuming incorrectly that it's an adult, then we need to send him somewhere that.
I don't know. When I went to Disney as an adult, I was pretty happy about it.
We should go to Disney, especially when our guest last month, Philo Barnhart, actually gave us a good insight on all of the hauntings of Disney and some wonderful Walt Disney stories. So I guess we might have an in on where to go and what to do.
It's true. Totally true.
But following up with our talk on haunted objects and our coming off our weekend of investigations, I think it's only natural we bring our guest on tonight, bring Tony on, and let's talk to him and see what's going on with him.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good. We just came off a long weekend of investigating and live streaming and doing a lot of special events. It seemed like they were, believe it or not, it was like clockwork. Everything ran smoothly. You know, when it comes to live streaming from haunted locations and stuff, you know, lo and behold, you'll get some kind of like funky thing going on. But we released a new format, and we had it come through our studios in Los Angeles, and we were in Gettysburg.
Right.
And you know what? That aspect of it made it 10 times better because the solid broadcast right from California never was interfered. You know, when we're going to these locations and stuff, there's always some kind of interference or issues or you know, spirits.
Right.
I think the spirits sometimes don't even, they laugh. They're like, yeah, let's cut the feed, you know, and then they laugh. They get a kick out of it. So
that's very true.
It was one of those weekends that we had a lot planned and it all worked perfect. So
good.
We're doing really good. Just a little tired, you know, cause you very, you don't sleep much and then travel back. You know,
right.
So I don't think I have to tell
right.
you about the long nights that a paranormal investigator, you know, I would say suffers from, but
it's draining for sure. But it's something that, you know, you have to do to gather information when you're on a haunting investigation. So yeah, it comes with a job, you know, being tired.
Exactly.
It is. And, you know, it doesn't hit you till like a day or two after, I notice, at least for me.
Yep.
You know, like
right.
I'll have the,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it's just the adrenaline of, like, doing, you know, the investigation and stuff. And then, like, the awful dread of the drive home, I think, is, like, one of the most awful feelings and sensations that I have. you know, because most of my travel trips are usually 5 hours, and knowing that I just spent, you know, three or four days of not sleeping, then on the fourth day I got to drive 5 hours. I really procrastinate leaving, and then on top of it, then it's like I always say, you know, all right, I want to leave by noon, and then I'm like, well, maybe by two. Next thing you know, it's like 6 p.m., and I'm like, dear God, you know, after dinner, I got to go. You know, and then I don't get in until midnight. It's like one, I could have just stayed and investigated. So at least that's
a very familiar story.
That's my
story.
Unfortunate. Yeah, definitely. Because it's just, it gets you. So we appreciate you coming on our show tonight. We've been talking about, you know, our investigations and obviously haunted items. And, you know, we want to get your take on both. And it's kind of cool because, you know, we do many different topics and stuff on our show and have many guests. Coming off of, you know, all of our investigations, it's nice to kind of talk shop with, you know, another paranormal investigator.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot involved in doing an investigation. Matter of fact, we just were at the Conjuring House in Rhode Island last night, and that's why I laughed when you said about the travel home, because it was about 2.5 or 3 hour ride home for me from Rhode Island after doing that. But it was actually more of an event that we held there. We showed the Conjuring Devil Made Me Do It movie, showed that to a group of about 20 people, and we had dinner, and then we took questions and things, and then we had them investigate the house for a couple hours, these guests that we had to see what it was like in that old farmhouse built back in the 1600s. You know, that's the house that the first Conjuring movie was even about. So that was an interesting place, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you capture any kind of good activity yesterday or anything?
I didn't. No, but I think some other people did. They heard a voice in the basement call out the name Michael in the basement. There's a lot of activity that happens, but you know, when you got a bunch of people, a bunch of guests that came, there were about 20 of them, you know, you're not going to get the kind of EVPs or the kind of evidence that you would normally get if you went in, you know, onesie twosies. A lot of people just it doesn't do well as far as doing a real investigation. This is just more or less to show them, you know, what the house was like, and just give them like a mini investigation of it after they watched the movie. But we have been there prior, and there is things that have happened, and orbs, noises, psychic light rods that we saw, voices that would emanate from nowhere. Once in a while, we'd pick up a lot of activity happened in that house to the parent family, and I believe there's still activity there even today, you know?
No, for sure. I think it's a really cool location. And, you know, it's one of those that...
Have you been there?
I have not personally been there, but I know people who have been there, and, you know, we're planning on going at some point.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. I think you'd enjoy it because it does have that aura about it. You know, it's an old farmhouse. It's, you know, built in the 1600s, I believe, or very, very early 1700s. It's very old and rustic. And, you know, there are five girls that live there, the Perrin family and the husband and the wife. And, you know, Carolyn Perrin had a lot of activity happen to her, the mother. She's the one who said she had this vision at the foot of her bed called Bathsheba Sherman, an old haggy-looking thing. But she said her head looked like it was like when somebody hang somebody and their head snaps and breaks. It was like hanging off her shoulder, and she heard a voice coming from it. Said, "I'll drive you out with fiery brooms. I'll drive you mad with death and gloom." That she heard that echo through the bedroom when she was there, Carolyn. So it's a weird place. There's a lot of history there. So it is a good place for you guys to someday go to and investigate, you know?
Oh, definitely. I totally want to go.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah,
we've had
the offer to go a couple times, and we just haven't got around to yet. It's it's not super close from Cleveland, or, you know, even if we look leave from Gettysburg, it's still not super close. So it's almost like you got to plan in like a 3 or 4 day trip. So
yeah.
I think that's been the obstacle at this point.
Yeah, from Gettysburg, it's probably about 9 hours or so, eight, nine hours maybe from Gettysburg, I would assume, because from Connecticut to Gettysburg is like 6 hours. So it took me 2.5, almost 2:45 maybe to get there from Connecticut to Rhode Island. And that's, you know, it's like a northeastern way to go. But anyway, it's
right.
a good place to try to investigate. But there's so many places that are haunted, and, you know, from the history. If you go to an old location, you know, of course, Gettysburg is really good. But if you go to any old church, any old structures, any old place where a lot of tragedies have occurred, you know, like Ed Warren used to say, tragedies create the ghost syndrome. The older a place, the more tragedies occurred, and the more spirit activity you're going to find through those tragedies, such as murder, such as, you know, sickness and death and suicides that happened on that land, perhaps, and you'll there'll be earthbound entities there, you know. So that's why New England is such a great place in the United States to investigate, because it's old.
Right, and I know we spent a lot of time in Gettysburg, and Nikki now works full time in Gettysburg at you know, one of the most haunted inns in America. So, you know, we do a lot out there, and you know, the tragedy and everything that's based in that area is quite. It's really makes for some interesting paranormal investigations, to say the least. But you know, it's just all around. Like Nikki says, you could probably go investigate the Sheets gas station because something happened on that land. You know, it's
I'm sure it used to be a field hospital. Right.
Very yeah. possible because you know, the spirits are all around us anyway. I mean, there's spirits around us all the time. Some make themselves known, some don't. Some remained earthbound, some have come back for a short period of time, like a visitation apparition would happen to people. In other words, just to give you an example of what I mean when I say something like that is, you know, like a mother or father is asleep in their bed and their young son or daughter overseas in a war, serving overseas, and they get killed over there. Moments later, we've gotten reports, seconds later, these people see a vision of their son or daughter at the foot of the bed. They awaken, and there's their son or daughter glowing like a specter, and then they disappear. You know, a visitation apparition to let them know that, hey, I'm okay, Ma. Don't worry, I'm still alive in spirit. So, yeah, you get a million kinds of different phenomena that can happen to people. And so it's very interesting to find these things. A lot of the hauntings that we go on are earthbound entities, ones that haven't left for various reasons, simply because they are more familiar with their surroundings. And perhaps they weren't that religious in life. They never thought about God. They didn't pray a lot. And then when they pass away, even if they're offered the light, which a lot of people are offered the light right away to go towards, a lot of people don't even go towards the light because they say to themselves, that can't be for me. I wasn't that good of a person. I never even believed in God or heaven. So I'm going to stay right here in my house. And they just discard it. And they just stay in their house where they're used to their belongings and the stuff that they acquired over their lifetime. And it takes sometimes years and years for them to realize that that's not the right place to be, earthbound. They need to go towards that light and, you know, go towards heaven if they're offered it.
Right. Definitely.
That's a great description, you know, and I totally agree with that. And it's interesting with the different phenomena and the different ways they present themselves. We even notice that, you know, even with the devices, we notice some work some locations, some at others, and you know, some have, you know, spirits have their own particular one that they prefer to use, you know, and
Yep, that's true. So, yeah, you know, we use equipment, too, when we go on our cases. But when Ed and Lorraine used to do it years ago, they didn't use any equipment because they didn't have any. The only equipment they had
were
cassette recorder and audio cassette recorder, or even way back when they used to use an open reel tape deck for EVPs. Ed would carry around this portable open reel deck, you know, pretty heavy, 25 pounds or so, and he'd set up with a microphone. And he set up with a microphone and he'd listen, and he'd even do interviews with that thing. And then we went to audio cassette, because remember, they started like in the mid-50s going on cases and going to haunted locations. And it all happened with Ed and Lorraine Warren, because Ed lived in a haunted house when he was a kid. From age 5 to about age 12, he lived in a house in Bridgeport that was haunted. And everybody knew it, including his sister knew it, his father knew it. But his father said to him one day, because Ed relayed this to me once, he said, you know, my father was a very, like, logical guy. He was, like, a state police officer. He's very logical. He looked at me one day, and I was, like, about 9 years old. He said, hey, Ed, there's a logical reason for everything that happens in this home. And then Ed would laugh at me, and he'd go, but my father never told me the logical reason. He would say there's a logical reason, but he wouldn't explain anything. So the father even knew things were happening in that house. And when Ed joined the Navy in 1943, at age 17, he was going to marry Lorraine. He didn't marry her yet until he was on survivor's leave later in May. He said to her, when I get out of the Navy, I'm going to find out if other people have had the kind of haunting phenomena happen to them like I did in that house in Bridgeport. And Lorraine, remember, 17 years old. She had psychic ability, but she never saw a ghost or anything. She said, Ed, you guys are all reading the same books. There's no such thing as ghosts. What are you talking about? And Ed looked at her and said, that's because you never lived in a haunted house like I did. I know there's ghosts. So when he got out of the Navy, that's what he did. He went in search of other people who had haunting phenomena so he could ask them questions and try to see the familiarities between his haunting and these people. So that's how he basically started. You know, he went to art school for a couple of years. He painted on landscapes and painted haunted houses. And then one day he came home from the art school. This is a couple of years after the Navy, World War II. And he said, Lorraine, I quit art school. And she said, Ed, you love painting. What'd you quit for? He's cocky back then, you know. He said, I can mm-hmm. paint better than the instructors. I'm going to make us a lot of money. And that's how they got started. He said, I'm going to make us a lot of money. So he would get these small, like 8x10 pieces of wood, call them barn door paintings. They look like a barn door that he made it. He'd paint them on acrylic, and he'd paint these scenes, and then he'd drive up with Lorraine, now he's in his 20s, to these mm-hmm. tourist locations like New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts, you know, during the summer. And he'd park his car, his 1933 Chevy that he had, and we still have. He parked the car and get out of the car, sit in a chair with an easel, and he'd sell the paintings. And how that got him more notoriety is what he was good at painting. So what he did is he sold those to make money. And he said to me one time, oh, I make a lot of money doing that when I was young. I said, how much did you make it? He'd say, oh, I make $4 or $5 a painting. I started laughing. I said, what do you mean you're making $5 a painting, Ed? And he said, well, $5. He goes, if I sold 5 paintings in a day, it's $25. Back then, he goes, we used to stay in a log cabin up in Vermont for $1 a day. And we'd buy hot dogs for 10 cents each. He said, and 20 cents a gallon for gas. He goes, so if I made $25 in a day, I had a lot of money. So I laughed.
Right.
But what got him into these haunted locations is he used to read Fate magazine, which I believe might even still be published today, about the size of the old Reader's Digest, like about 5x7 size book. Mm-hmm. And he used to read these haunted locations, and Ed would find out where these places were. He'd take Lorraine with him. He'd drive up to the person's house, park in front, and he would take out a sketch pad and a pencil, take him about 40 minutes to sketch the outside of the house. He'd sit there nice and take it easy, do a nice sketch of the outside of the house. And then he'd hand it to Lorraine, who was a real charmer even back when she was in her 20s. Lorraine, go up to that house, knock on the door. If somebody answers the door, just hand them the painting and say, your husband made this nice sketch of your house. He wants you to have it. And maybe he'll invite me in. Maybe they'll invite us in and we can talk about their haunting. I can ask questions. And that's what he used to do. 9 out of 10 times, even more than that, Lorraine would be waving him up from the car. Come on up, Ed. They want to talk to you. And he would pick their brain about hauntings.
Wow.
And so that's how he started to learn about haunting phenomena, and besides reading, of course. And then he got called on cases when he did a gallery showing of his paintings in his town, in his little town of Monroe, at a little social function. And after he showed them, a gentleman came up to him, this is like 1967, and said, Mr. Warren, that was very interesting about these paintings that you have in the little paragraph you have about these haunted houses. How would you like to speak about that at our school? And Ed laughed and says, you know, I don't do public speaking. And the guy said to Ed, well, you know, Ed, Mr. Warren, we'll give you $300 if you come to our school. And Ed looked up and said, when do I start? Tell me when. And he went. And so Ed did that. And so he did it several times, and more people would call him up. Then a college called him up. And that's how they started doing the lecture tour for years. They used to do like 70 or more lectures per semester. And the first time I ever heard Ed talk about ghosts and devils and demons was back in 79 when I met him after meeting his daughter, Judy. I was so intrigued by what he was saying about these things. You know, like, I couldn't believe he's talking about these devils and demons. And even back then, you know, he had the Annabelle doll. He showed a slide of it. I'm like, oh, geez. And he'd go into detail about what happened with the doll and why it's real, why evil is real, why the devil is a real entity, and which it is. And it got me so intrigued that, and I kept going out with Judy, his daughter, and go over to his house for dinner, and I just pick his brain. He'd take me down to the museum and show me around all the time, tell me different stories, you know. But the only sad part about all this is that, you know, Ed never got a chance to see even one of the Conjuring movies. Lorraine saw 1 and 2, but, you know, he didn't get a chance to see 1 because he passed away in 06. So, but he was so knowledgeable in the paranormal realm that it was amazing to me. Amazing, the stuff he...
Right.
He said to me one time, he said, there's not a question I can't answer. So I used to try to trick him. And I'd ask him these crazy questions about demonic and, you know, ghosts and things. And whatever I asked him, he had an answer for. He goes, I just know a lot about it because I read thousands of books. I talked to a lot of parapsychologists and priests and everybody else, and I went on hundreds and thousands of cases at the time. He said, I know a lot about this stuff. You can't trip me up. And he laughed, you know. And he was right. I couldn't trip him. Whatever I said, he had a decent, reasonable answer for, you know. So I know he was the master of the paranormal realm, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I'm sure he has some amazing stories.
Oh, yeah. A lot of amazing stories.
We could really just have you on it and just have you talk, because I was, like, just intrigued by everything you were going to say. And I'm not one to be intrigued by much. You know, so it's like, to say, for me to give you credit
that
like that,
that's pretty amazing.
No,
that might be the first time I ever said that. Ed had that kind of knowledge. That's why people say to me, well, Mr. Sparrow, you're a demonologist, right? I always hesitate to answer that question. I know there's a million people now out there who claim to be and say they know so much about demonology, about the study of devils and demons. But I knew how much Ed knew. So it's like, you know, I knew how knowledgeable, and I know, even though he taught me everything that I could learn, he still knew more than me because he read maybe 200 more books than me at the time. And, you know, it went on thousands of cases when I went on hundreds of cases. And he just had that kind of knowledge that paled, my knowledge paled in comparison. So when people say, you're a demonologist, right? I go, well, I'm a psychic researcher. I don't like to call myself a demonologist. That's throwing away big words. It's almost like saying, that, you know, you're a doctor after you read a few books on medicine. No, you're not a doctor. You may know a little bit about it, but you're not as knowledgeable as the person who wrote the book, you know. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, I think for about fifteen dollars, there's places you can even get a certificate that says you're a demonologist. Now, it seems like the requirements to hold that like official title are not sometimes what they're cracked up to be. So I like your explanation and the way you present it. That's, on point, at least my thinking and her thinking.
Yeah, I don't mean to be self-effacing and like, you know, I'm not worthy of it, but I'm not worthy of it compared to Ed. It's like going to karate school and there's a 10th degree master. And so you took karate for like 2 years and he taught you a lot, right? Or 3 years or 4 years. He taught you a lot, but you're still not as good as him. He still knows more than you. No matter what you say, you can open your own website and say that you're a karate master, but you don't know what he knows. You know what I mean? So honor him, I don't say, yes, I'm a demonologist. I just say I'm a psychic researcher.
Nice. I like that.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So,
mm-hmm.
So you know, we have done some, we've done tons of research and we've done thousands of investigations. And, you know, it seems like I don't know if it's just because of the movies and just in general now, but haunted objects and haunted items seem to be more popular. So we stumble across it more lately than, you know, before. You know, and
right.
I think people now are kind of taking their hauntings and maybe saying, hey, our haunting did not start till this item came into our house. It has to be that item. You know, not disregarding every other possibility. It's because it's kind of, you know, these haunted items have brought, you know, kind of come into more mainstream now where I think,
right.
you know, people see it on television. They're like, oh my God, I got a doll. You know, I got my mom's doll when she died. And, you know, and the lights flicker now or the activity, you know, that was happening in their house. They're not, they're not accustomed to it. And now they're blaming the new doll
right.
that entered in or the, whatever.
Right.
So it's interesting because you have that thrown into the equation now more than ever.
Yeah, it's the easy explanation. It's the easy explanation. Well, I just bought this at a tag sale, this dollar, this object, this chair even, or whatever. I bought this at the tag sale
mm-hmm.
yesterday, and today my lights are flickering and I hear noises and I see stuff out of this corner of my eyes. Well, it could be that, maybe. But it doesn't necessarily mean that's what it is. It could be very coincidental that that's what's happening. But, you know, haunted objects, the attachments of haunted objects and things like that, I don't think it's as commonplace as people are making it to be. I really don't. Because,
mm-hmm.
and the reason I don't, and it's just my opinion and, you know, that's what I think, is that if the object has an attachment, it has to be from black witchcraft or a sorcerer, somebody who's very knowledgeable in incantations and rituals and prayers. And I don't know how many people are doing that. I mean, you know, maybe some. But there's a big difference between an object that's possessed by something and an object that has an attachment or a bad vibe to it. You know, you can call it a bad vibe more than an attachment because, first of all, it's possession. God's not going to allow a human being to possess, you know, a hassock or a chair or a TV set. That doesn't happen. God doesn't allow that. That's not part of the universal plan, is to have, you know, your grandmother sitting in a residing in a couch for 1,000 years. That doesn't work. That doesn't happen. A demonic entity could. Demonic entity could because it has more power, a lot more power. And it's opposite of what God teaches. So that's one thing. So if somebody says, I think it's my grandmother, that's not true. Or I think it's, you know, a little girl in that doll, it's not true either. That's what happened with Annabelle, where they had a seance, and the psychic convinced the women by her seance, the two women said, oh, there's a, I'm sensing a six-year-old girl that was killed outside your apartment. And she's about 6 or 7 years old. Her name is Annabelle. She's in your doll. And the girls bought that explanation. That's not true. They knew that wasn't true after when slashes marks appeared on the fiance Lou of one of the nurses. But to get back to the possessed objects, to me it's possible. But I'm just wondering how many darn black witchcraft people and sorcerers are there out there doing this? You know what I mean? Because it's not going to just happen on its own. Something has to happen with the artifact. So, in other words, you take a priest, and a priest is a very holy and pious person. and you pull out of your pocket a medal or a crucifix and say, Father, can you bless this for me? And he blesses it. What is he doing? He's infusing it through prayer with positivity, with good vibes, right? With good vibrations, let's put it that way. And so it's something that's like a holy relic now, you know. So I find it hard to believe that there's millions of these people opposite of a priest throwing in negative incantations and negative vibes over all these objects. It's possible, but I don't think it's as common as, you know, people are making it out to be. Like everybody that has a haunted house, you had to have a, you know, because you bought something at a tag sale, now your house is haunted.
Right.
I don't buy it. And why I don't buy it, too, is because I buy lots of stuff at tag sales, and so does my wife, over 25 years of collecting stuff, and I never had a bad thing happen to me. So what are the odds it's going to happen, like, you know, one out of five? I bought hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of objects with no ill effects. So this one person that calls us up and says, well, I bought a chair, now I got problems. They could be imagining it, or it could be coincidental, you know. So the haunted object part, haunted object thing to me is kind of rare versus common, you know. Like I said, though, it's my opinion.
And I respect that. Well, no, I think it's a great opinion.
it's really, and it's interesting, too. I don't know if you got a chance to catch a little bit of our introduction.
No.
You know, we purchased a lot, and meaning like a auction lot of supposedly dolls. And on the side, I had found out that they came from a home that had a lot of activity, only because people know what I do. So I bought the dolls, and we took one. For the heck of it, you know, like I'm on the fence on a lot of the haunted object stuff, I'll be honest with you. And you know, on the fence is me saying nicely that I don't buy a lot of it. But there was one particular doll that we brought out and took and just almost like kind of messing around, like, all right, let's bring the haunted doll out. And we asked the name, and the name came through Chris.
I heard that part. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And here's kind of an odd scenario that I just painted while listening to your explanation and your theory. So we've taken Chris to many different locations. He kind of travels with us. We almost did like a Where's Chris type of thing on our Instagram account for a little while. But then it kind of got played out too. Like, you know, like the last thing when I was in the heat of investigation, my last thought in my mind was going to get Chris and take a picture of him at a new place. You know, so kind of like the intent was there, but like, did we execute it? Not that much. But, you know, it seemed like we took him to maybe about, you know, eight different places and multiple times. And like, done about eight different investigations, we kept getting the name Chris. Every time we asked, what's your name? Chris. And maybe it was just, it was more than a coincidence because it was on three different types of devices, apps, you know, and I don't like apps either, so that's a whole other thing, but it's just Chris, everything Chris. And we took it, and here's the odd scenario based on what your theory is we ended up, and I don't even know why Nicole brought him on this trip. I didn't know she did. And
he was in my car. He needed to get out.
She like puts him in the car seat and rolls the window down for him and the whole nine. Kind of weird. But we went to a haunted museum, Archive of the Afterlife. It's in West Virginia. A buddy of ours, we really like him, Steve Hummel, runs it and has what's called his dark room of objects that supposedly have evil, demonic, and dark entities or an item that maybe is based around something that occurred that was in the space, or it's the dark room. It has some interesting objects. And his museum has some interesting objects, but lo and behold, Chris, for whatever reason, Nicole went out and got Chris, brought him in, and we put him in the dark room. And then I thought she had him. She thought I had him, and he ended up staying in the demonic room. So based on your scenario, We might have just took Chris home.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you never know. I mean, you never know. That's a good story. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is, to be honest with you. But how did you get the name Chris? So from a machine, from a box, or how'd you get it? Spirit box?
Yes, from multiple spirit boxes, a device. I can't remember if we got a straight out EVP or not, but it seemed like we'd say, you know, is there a name that you would like, you know, that's associated with this particular bell? And every single time it was Chris, and it was, the locations were different. So, you know, I was thinking,
yeah,
is it, you know,
the boxes,
we take it out of
the first boxes were different.
Yeah, probably like four or five different spirit boxes. Locations were different.
Yeah. You know,
well, you know,
we tried to
put some variables.
You were picking up. You were getting some entity coming through that was saying it was Chris, but then again, was it a human spirit? Probably not. You know what I mean? Because, you know, what does the diabolical or demonic spirit want to do? The diabolical or demonic spirit wants to confuse and trick.
Right.
They're very clever. So it can be saying in it, just like when you use a Ouija board and you say, is this my grandmother Sally? And it comes back and says yes. And then you try to test it and you say, well, Aunt Sally or my grandmother Sally, what did you get me for my 15th birthday? And Aunt Sally comes back, I got you a red bicycle. And you say, wow, that's my Aunt Sally, because guess what? I got a red bicycle. It's all meant to deceive. It's all meant to deceive you.
Right.
Into thinking you're talking to your grandmother. That's where the problem arises. So that you can never really trust what's coming through the box. If you're going to ask that question, or for me, I should say, and ask that question, I would say, in the name of God, I ask you to give me your name. In the name of Jesus Christ, I would ask you to give me your name. And then if it did give you a name, then I would say things like, you know, do you believe in God? See what the answer is. Are you in heaven?
Mm-hmm.
No. Are you in hell? Wherever. Can you recite the Our Father with me? Do you know what the Our Father is? I would get into a religious thing to see what I'm dealing with. Because demonic spirits, sometimes they will, but most of the times they'll shy away from doing stuff like, yeah, I believe in God. They won't answer that. Or God is good. Is God good? Is God, you know, the best? See what the answer is, if you get answers at all. But that, you know, now you're playing around. Now you're, it's almost like you're playing with a Ouija board, which is a dangerous thing to do. So the spirit boxes and things like that, they're okay if you use them properly. Just like if you were to use a Ouija board, I would always protect myself by envisioning myself in a glowing white light all around my aura, all around my body. I would just close my eyes and envision a white light, which we call a Christ light or God's light of protection, and ask God, please protect me from anything evil or demonic or inhuman. You would ask that and for guidance, and you would ask for protection from God before you ever use that spirit box or Ouija board, because that's where people get into trouble when they start to, because, you know, and the stuff that Ed used to investigate, and Lorraine and me, a lot of stuff happened with people dabbling with Ouija boards, dabbling with psychic readers, because they're inviting in things that they know nothing about. In other words, they're not challenging, but they're inviting in the other world. When you use a Ouija board, that's your conduit to the spirit realm. Even though people say that the Ouija board is just a piece of board and plastic, it's nothing. What are you talking about? It's just a game. Well, no, it's not just a game, because you're asking questions of the unknown, and this is a method for them to give you an answer that you could understand through that Ouija board numbers and letters. So when you say, is there a spirit here, and it says yes, something is moving the planchet. There are people who will swear up and down it, no, I didn't move it myself, it just started to go on its own. And that's true. So same thing with the spirit box that you use. You got to be very careful, because, you know, it's going to suck you in thinking it's Chris. And if, when you just said to me, well, maybe we took Chris home. Oh, yeah, maybe you did. Maybe you took a devil home, too. You see, like, you got to be careful.
Right.
You know, you got to be careful what happens with these, because people use them a lot, and people do, and the problem too is you don't have to be affected right away. That's the problem with this whole deal, is that, well, nothing happened to me. I asked, you know, on six different occasions, and it came through as Chris, and so what? It's nothing. Don't worry about it. And then, you know, 3 months later, you get in a bad car accident, or your mother gets in a bad car accident, or gets sick, and it's all because you invited in the devil, but you never attribute it to what you did prior to. You don't think back and say, wait a minute, maybe it was that spirit box when I asked who that was, and it said Chris. Maybe it wasn't a human spirit. You don't think that way. You're never even going to associate it, but bad things start to happen to people, and they don't associate it, but that might be what's triggered it. You know what I mean? So
right.
You always got to protect yourself. So if you want to use a spirit box, anybody out there, protect yourself with the white light. Say to yourself, God, please protect me. Say a prayer if you want, but envision your body, your whole body covered from head to toe. And what it does is it protects your aura. And it's a white light of protection, we call it, which is effective. It really is effective if you have faith in the Lord. If you have faith in a higher power, God, he's going to protect you if you ask him. He's not going to forsake you and let a devil take over. But, you know, because God will allow a demonic entity to only go so far and stop. But then again, remember this too, guys. God gave us free will. He's not going to stop you from asking questions. He's not going to stop you from getting involved with Satanism. He's not going to stop you from getting involved with demonic things. If you want to use the Ouija board, nobody's going to stop you. But he doesn't want you to. He doesn't want you to communicate with demonic spirits. He wants you to pray, but he wants you to pray to the right thing, to him, to the saints, and things like that. So people who get involved in Satanism and things like that, they have a very bad time because, unbeknownst to them, you know, they're going against God and God's will, and sometimes it doesn't catch up to them at all in life, you know, but it catches up to them after they're dead. In other words, they're not with God anymore. They're with the devil, and you don't want to go there. You don't want to go there, you know. So,
right.
So that's my take on it. My take on this whole thing with the paranormal is you have to, if you're going to be a paranormal investigator, it's a good thing to believe in God. These people say, I'm a paranormal investigator, but you know, I don't have a religion, and I don't really believe in, I don't know if I believe in God or not, maybe, maybe not. That's a dangerous road to go down because bad things can happen to people who don't have faith when they do this kind of work, because no cop is going to help you when somebody's got something throwing somebody across the room with invisible hands, grabbing them. A cop's not going to come in and be able to save you. Nobody can save you from something like that except what? God and prayer and exorcists and people doing blessings and deliverances. So that's where our group comes from, a religious standpoint, because that's where Ed came from, spiritual and faith. Not just, you know, he did do scientists, but not a scientific approach. Scientific approach doesn't actually do anything to help a family who's haunted. Like if you go into a place where a family's being tormented, and just by setting up equipment and recording things, that's fine to gather evidence, but it doesn't help the family. The whole reason Ed used to gather evidence in Lorraine when they went into a place was to gather the evidence to show it to the church or their person's, their clergy or the person's faith and say, look, this is what's happening. Look what we got on film. Look at the recording we got. Look, and this is their eyewitness accounts of what happened. Can you help them? It's because the church is not going to just go in and try to do an exorcism without evidence. So that's what their whole thing was based on, helping families who were tormented. You know, Ed, once in a while, sure, he'd go to haunted places like structures, you know, institutions, like a mental hospital once in a while. But his main focus was to help other people that were experiencing torment from an entity in the house. You know, because that's what he experienced.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was a long diatribe I gave you. Sorry.
No.
I totally agree, and I think, you know, even to take it to a different level is a lot of times when we do our investigations, we don't always believe what we hear based on, you know, I feel as if, you know, if we're talking to a spirit who is knowledgeable and can interact with us, then they know what's going on. So, you know, we've had done investigations where we're trying to communicate with someone specifically that is tied to that building, and, you know, we get that name that comes through, but is that specifically
right.
That person or just another spirit that's having a good time and getting a kick out of screwing us up? you know, messing with them.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We went and investigated a place, and the guy's a plaque was on the wall, and his name was Thomas Ingram. And I said, "What's your name?" And it's Thomas Ingram. You know, was it just a spirit that could read? You know, like we could. You know, I was saying, "Yeah, I'm Thomas Ingram." You know, or was it actually Thomas Ingram? So, you know,
right.
I think sometimes you easily could be fooled, and you have to keep that in mind that it might just be a prankster. Because I know I would do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. Yes, absolutely right about that. Because, you know, there are mischievous spirits, too. In other words,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, jokesters. Like say you die or I die, I might be a jokester if I was earthbound. Just to razz people a little bit, you know, before I went towards
space. I
right.
plan on it.
You know what,
right.
yeah, you know
if
what
I
mean?
An
so,
option,
so,
I plan
so
on
I was,
it.
Like I said, like Ed used to say to me, I'm going to haunt a lot of people when I die. He was kidding, but maybe he wasn't. In other words, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he wanted to, because he was a prankster in life. Ed was a big jokester. He was a big
mm-hmm.
jokester. He wasn't like, you see Patrick Wilson on the screen. Patrick Wilson does a nice job of portraying Ed, but Ed had a side to him that was a real prankster. You know, like one time he went to a restaurant with another couple. He and Lorraine and another couple went, and the other guy was drinking beer. Ed doesn't drink. So the other guy's drinking beer, and Ed's saying to himself, I know this guy's going to have to go to the bathroom pretty soon. So Ed gets up, Ed says, I got to go to the bathroom. But he knew the restaurant, and the restaurant had the kind of door where you could lock it and pull the door closed from the outside, and then nobody can get in the restroom. So he went into the bathroom, Ed did, but he locked the door on the way out, knowing that the guy was going to have to go in a few minutes. And it'd be embarrassing, he said. He said, you know, Charlie got up and he went to go to the bathroom and the door was locked. He had to go searching around for the manager and get the key. So little things that Ed used to do like that. And then one time he went to England with a guy and all the times Ed went to England and Scotland with Lorraine and other trips, he could never get any good food. Always got, he asked for a steak, he'd get like a, you know, 1 ounce thing, like a little cube of steak and lousy. But Ed liked a lot of steak. So he went over there with his friend John, Kennyhurst, and John says to the waiter, I'll have a steak. And the guy brings over this humongous steak falling off the plate, and Ed was jealous of that, you know, because Ed ordered something else. So what did Ed do? While John's eating the steak, Ed takes a knife and fork, cuts the steak in half, puts one half on his plate and starts eating and starts laughing. He goes, you're not going to eat all that steak. I'm having half of it. He's a jokester. He liked to kid around about things, you know. And so, like one time we were in Scotland, and the Isle of Skye, and I went into the restroom, and they have like these communal restrooms and stuff, or like in a town. So it was in Portree, which was the capital of Skye. So we went in, and it was like wooden doors for the stalls. So I went in one of the stalls, and as soon as I went in the stall, Ed's banging, 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 like, hey, 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 what are you doing in there? He's kidding around. He thinks he's banging on my door. He's banging on the door next to me with a guy in it. The guy opens the door and says, what do you want? Ed says, oh, that wasn't me. I didn't bang on your door. That guy just ran out of here. The guy just ran out and banged on your door. He was a jokester. He was a kidder.
Well, and I think you need that to kind of balance out the
yeah. When he used to go on investigations, he'd walk in the house, and first thing he'd say to the family, it was, okay, where's the milk and cookies? I'm hungry. And then he'd settle down and he'd be serious. But he wanted to add humor to what he was doing because he knew the family was tormented. They were all serious. His investigators, like the sometimes young kids would be, young 20-year-olds would be helping Ed out. They were all serious, and when they walk in, almost like, you know, like a doomsday thing. So Ed would lighten the atmosphere, you know. Yeah, but then he'd get down to business, and he'd be serious from then on. But when he was not in that mode, when he wasn't like in a haunted house, he was a jokester, man. I mean, he was a real jokester, this guy. Kid around all the time, you know.
We'll have to do a whole segment on that one time because that's very dear to my heart. I enjoy pulling pranks on pretty much every investigation, saying something. And the way I look at it, as long as I laugh, that's all that matters. You know, and I think I've done. One thing is I know that I cannot beat them to the location, or if there's been a couple times they won't let us stay at the location, so we get a hotel. And I remember one time I beat
mm-hmm.
them to the hotel, and I got all the keys, and I went into the room, and I made it as if there was a guy sleeping in the bed. I took pillows from the opposite bed and made up like
right.
a dummy guy in the bed and put the TV on. And then I put their keys, gave them back their keys, and they walked in. The TV was on. There's a dummy in the bed. And the lady just like, I don't know, I don't think she screamed or what she did, but she's like backed out slowly. She's like, we're in the wrong room. Someone's already got this room. And it was just me. I got there ahead of time. I was bored. So I made up like dummy.
I was on to him.
See, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's a funny thing. You have to have a little humor infused in that kind of work because it's very serious work, and you can't drag everybody down with the seriousness of it. You know what I mean? Like, you want to lift their spirits a little too, and like break the tension kind of thing. You know, so that's what I like. I don't like when I have a place I'm going to. I take a fairly new investigator with me, and they're all like serious, and they're all like somber, and they're acting like, you know, somebody's going to jump out and slash their throat. They're so afraid. I don't like that. I like a little bit of humor infused within that, you know, lighten the load a little bit, you know, like you said. So, yeah, that's the method that we use too, you know.
Well, sadly enough, it looks like our interview is coming to an end. So we're going to have to schedule like a part two or something to this. So,
sure.
You know, it's been
sure.
our pleasure having you on. Do you have anything
that
you'd like to plug?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to plug the Paracon that we're having in October. On October 30th, we're having it's called the Warrens, Seekers of the Supernatural Paracon, and it's going to be in the Courtyard by Marriott in Waterbury, Connecticut. And people who are interested in going to this, we're going to have about 8 speakers. We're going to have, Artifacts and Museum I'm bringing in a separate room. I'm bringing the Annabelle doll, the Shadow doll, the Satanic Worship Idol, the plastic dinosaur from the Devil in Connecticut case, which is the Conjuring movie. Even though it wasn't focused in the movie, it was featured in the book, the creature that David Glatzel had. And then a surprise artifact from our occult museum is going to be there also in a separate room. And we're going to have about 50 vendors there from all over the country, people selling paranormal equipment, psychic readers, healers, Reiki healers, people selling various books and crystals and things like that. And if anybody wants to know more about signing up, just go to www.warrens.net. Warrens.net. It's a plural. Warrens.net. And click on events, and you'll see it, the Paracon. And we still have some tickets left, but, you know, we sold a lot of tickets already. That's not until October. It's for some reason people are really interested in going to this thing. We've got about 800 tickets sold already. So,
wow.
You know, so we're not going to go too much more. Maybe 1,000 tickets, and then we're going to stop. We don't have it's a big ballroom place, and separate rooms too for the artifact room and for the speakers. But it's still a lot of people showing up, so we have to, you know, put a limit to it. But just go to warrens.net, click on events, and you'll see all about it. It tells you all about the speakers, the guest speakers, and all of that. Like Ryan Buell from Paranormal State will be one of them. UFO guy will be another guy. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really good. And all of my team will be there. My wife, Judy, will be there. And I'll be there, of course. And we'll be interacting with everybody. So it'll be really fun.
Sounds good.
And you guys are invited for free. You guys don't have to pay. You just come on in. Just go look on Warren's at the event. All right?
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Definitely. And if you ever want to come out and investigate with us in Gettysburg, please just let me know and we can arrange that. And maybe we can do some kind of fun event or live stream or something based on having you come out.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Sounds good to me, Rob. I really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you guys. You're very nice. You're very professional. Just be careful out there. Do what I told you about the white light and about asking for protection before you use the box or anything, or even going in on a haunted location. What do we do? We just as an added benefit, the white light. Just remember the white light.
You got it. We try our best. All
okay,
right,
guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Yep.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So maybe Chris was meant to be in the dark room.
I don't know, though. My life feels incomplete without him. Maybe it's just my car feels incomplete without him.
Maybe that's the devil having its hold on you.
I just don't know if the devil's inside that sweet little face. I just don't know.
I don't know.
But it would be a face to hide in because,
that's,
you know what?
That's the ploy. That's the
mm-hmm,
ploy.
Exactly. Now I'm going to be skeptical of everything cute.
Right. And guess that let's be honest. What was the reason why we had the, you know, we had to hustle out of there because there's another event coming on. And maybe it tied in that Chris kind of like knew. He's like, you know, was summoning you out to the car to get him to bring him in.
Yeah. Maybe that was what it was. Or maybe we were just really tired and forgot. I don't.
I think Chris is home. I think we should leave Chris at the museum. I think what we need to do is maybe visit Chris or have, you know,
Steve visit Chris.
Have like a sit down, pull a chair up, be like, Chris, here's the deal. You know, are you really Chris, first of all, or what are you? And do you want to stay, you know, are you at home here? You know, and see what kind of response we get. If the doll was like, yeah, I'm not really Chris, you know, my ploy was to get back here with some of these objects. Yeah.
Well, you know what I said? My question is, if we get him back, is he going to be like badass now and he's going to have like, his hair is going to be dyed black, and he's going to have, like, black eyeliner and black nail polish, and he's going to be wearing gothic.
Very gothic. Yeah,
yeah,
it could be.
I wonder.
And then
I love him anyway.
I don't know.
Maybe
if
him
would,
and I will become twinsies.
I don't know about that. Let's stop there.
Okay. Fine.
No, I had sent you a text because based on his scenarios as well, you know, I did not have all of my injuries until, you know, we started investigating together. So I don't know if that's a something that, you know.
Yeah, but we can't blame Chris or nothing, you know, because like Chris,
that's true.
Obviously, he wasn't a part of that then. Maybe it's just me.
No. It could be just you. Maybe, let's be honest with you. I met you for the first time in person, like, in March, April. And by November, I was already laying on the ground. Couldn't get up. Had to have the ambulance. That was only, like, 6 months. You said it could take months, as he specifically said that. And then...
But maybe it's just you.
I was never injured prior to that moment. Then, I was with... And I was on the phone with you. You know, and then I tore my calf muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Major injury to my knee. And it's like attacking my legs. It's all leg.
Trying to take you out.
I've never had a leg issue before. It is.
It's trying to sweep you.
I never had a leg issue.
Watch, now you're just going to develop other issues. Because you're like, never had it, never had that issue. And now it's going to be like, boom.
Nope.
I hope. We can't handle any more of that.
Well, I just hope that whatever is doing it, if it is doing it, that they're done and realize that I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
White flag. Waving a white flag.
Yeah. He surrenders.
You got me. You got me good. I've spent like...
Yeah.
2 years out of the last five rehabbing, and I'm good now. You know, I did.
You've
it.
Done enough rehab for this lifetime, right?
Yeah, it had its fun, if that's the case, and move on.
Right.
Please
we'll see. I don't know if it works this way.
I don't know either.
Only one way to find out. Put it out there in the atmosphere and see what happens.
Yeah. Move on.
Yeah. Moving on. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I took a lot away from his his interview. And I'll be honest with you,
his storytelling
was on point. Yeah, and it was a good presentation.
I was entertained as hell.
His storytelling was good. And it was from like not his perspective. So he was actually retelling a story that was told to him, and it was still interesting. You know, a lot of times when you retell something that doesn't happen, you know, directly to you, it kind of, I think, loses its luster. And I think that his storytelling was on point, at least to the point when I was intrigued. And like I said, I'm very rarely intrigued.
Exactly. It doesn't happen that.
And honestly intrigued.
That same
no, song. Not a fake intrigued.
Yeah.
An honest intrigued.
Like for real. Right.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Yeah.
You know, I think you know
I
me well enough.
I've talked in for hours. Like, I have a lot of questions,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, obviously, you know, the show's only so long, so it's not like I can really ask them all. But, like, I have
that's
a lot of
questions.
That's
why we need to have, like a reoccurring spot, maybe. I think we should send him a message where, like, we've talked about it, and for a good 2 minutes, and we both were in agreement that we need to have some kind of reoccurring spot on with having
yeah.
you on our show, because it's you know, even his stories were great. We had like a story time.
Yeah.
And then like
ooh.
You know, some Q&A.
We could just do a story feature, and we could just feature one of his stories. Maybe he would be willing to do like a spot doing
and,
that.
Well, right, I know on his site they have a bunch of different cases and stuff. You know, there's a lot of possibilities there.
Definitely.
Yeah, and like I said, I was definitely intrigued and it was definitely cool. And, you know that I'm being sincere because there's a lot of times that we're out there. I'm like, oh, that's really great. And then we get in the car, we go somewhere, and I'm like, that wasn't that great. And you're like, yeah, you didn't have to even tell me. I knew what you were thinking. You know, but I'm mm-hmm. legitimately intrigued by his stories.
Yeah,
and I think
definitely.
I want to hear more, so...
Me too.
We'll have to leave that open to him.
We should. We should do that.
Well, we will see everybody on our next show. And I hope everyone got a chance to check out and enjoyed our live streams this past weekend, because they were very unique. And it was our
yes.
first time doing them in mass production, where we did them multiple days from the same location. And we will be putting them up in segments relatively soon. I don't want to give a date on it because that would be kind of the anxiety.
Then we'll just mess it up.
Yeah.
Well, then we'll just mess it up.
If I
Let's
say it's
going
to be done. Yeah. Within the next couple of weeks, we will have segments put up. If you did not catch it
when
live,
it happens,
we did it.
You'll know.
Okay. Yeah. And
okay.
You know, which was cool is we did live streams and live streaming investigations, and we got a chance to review a little bit, and I think there's some compelling responses.
Definitely.
So.
And some,
you know,
not so funny responses from entities.
Yes. And then some that like. Made no sense, but yet it was clear as day responses. Like,
right.
We had a live ghost box session with Richard Grieco, the king of 21 Jump Street. And he was, you know, he got a message, and I can't remember now if it said Richard first, but it said, you know, Richard Grieco had said, it did. I think it did too. I'm glad you verified that. You know, Richard Grieco asked, do you have a message for me? And within instant response, it was, Richard, go get toilet paper. Or you need toilet paper,
yeah.
One of the two.
One of
and,
those. It was along the lines of expressing that he needs toilet paper.
Right.
And if a spirit feels so compelled to say, hey, dude, you need TP, I'm thinking that, like, maybe it's time to listen. Maybe you're out. Yeah.
It's a very helpful spirit. I wish whoever was, like, if they were, instead of screwing with my legs, they would be like, hey, you need toilet paper. Or, hey, watch your step. You know, don't jump. Jumping's dumb.
I'm
what
there
are you
now.
Doing?
I'm the one doing that now. I'm like, hey, watch your step here. Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic, too, because I almost jumped off the porch at the Haunted Museum because I felt compelled to. Maybe it was Chris. He had one last push behind him.
He was like, jump, man, jump.
Yeah, do it, you know. Seems like something the devil would do. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's only from the roof.
You'll be okay, man.
You'll land on your feet. And I remember telling you that too. I was like, man, for some reason I thought I was going to jump on there. And I was like, no, I better not. That was the good entity that's with me was like, you know, like one on each shoulder
don't
type thing. It's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danger, danger.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the interview as much as we did, and I hope everyone enjoyed our live streams. And we'll be putting out more evidence this week, and we'll see everybody next show.
Yep. Everyone take care. Have a great week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.